Kamai.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our second episode of season 5 of Crime at the Family Table. We welcome you back for our season. I am one of your hosts, LaTanya, and I'm joined here by the esteemed, amazing, fantastical, beautiful, phenomenal, just genuinely good person, Alyssa. How you doing, Alyssa?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. Life is life, but here we are. So excited to be back. Thank you all for your patience and for listening to our episodes while we were gone. Yes.
We definitely appreciate it. So sorry, guys. Like, we're going to have some background stuff maybe eventually, but it's okay. We got this. But we definitely appreciate it. We saw that we, like, got some more people from, like, the UK and more people from, like, different parts of the country. So I was just like, okay, look at us. Like, we're expanding and growing. And, like, our demographics are coming up. And it has been a joy and an honor to really have you guys listening to our podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for bearing with us. We know we took a longer break than normal, but we're back and we're ready to dive into this season, which is going to be turned. Forgive me. I've got two little ones, so if you hear them in the background, that's what it is. We should be good in a few minutes, though, but
yeah. We understand.
I don't know. Like, I'm just really excited for this season, and there's been a lot of things going on in the world, especially with what I'll be talking about today, but won't jump into that until we're ready. I don't know. I mean, we'll be back for our usual banter. I think I'm just excited to get into today's episode.
Yeah, because I think that this season was like, when we kept picked, like, terminology, we kind of were figuring out, like, we could go so many places with the terminology. And I feel like when we came up with kind of, like, our script, like, what were we doing? Like, how are we going to, like, really branch this out and make this, like, episode? It really was like, wow, this is, like, flexing our researching muscles and also making us just more aware of the stuff that we be talking about, especially within cases that we'll talk about in the future. So, like, terms will be like, oh, like, this is what this means. Like, oh, okay, this is, like, what this can, you know, how this can be applied. And we can always go back to those episodes and be like, hey, like, we talked about this and it's come up again. So it will be definitely really good to go back on this. And I definitely feel like this season, like, is a little different than other ones, where I feel like we'll come back to terminology more often. Like, we'll go back and try to do another season probably of terminology again, because I think that we'll enjoy this type of formatting a lot.
And there are so many things, as I was doing my research, I was like, not realizing was like a criminal, term or a true crime term. I learned a lot in researching just the term that I'm talking about today.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot. And then, like, I feel like you can find a lot of keywords, and you can find a lot of things from, like, you know, the government sites, or like .org, .gov, EDUs. So, like, we definitely will find a lot more credible primary sourcing from what we're talking about versus secondary sourcing, which is usually what our cases pull from. And that is definitely something that makes it a whole lot more, I guess, as accurate as it can. Like, because when you're looking at terms, you're just looking at what's there, what's on the books, what's, like, the principal thing that's going on right now. And we kind of can stick to that. With cases, there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of gray area that can be looked at on both sides of cases. So, you know, I think that this allowed us to be more like detailed and like what is going on in these terms, and then like pulling the cases that are maybe current or in the past that can fit into our, so that way you have a case that you can kind of pull from to think about when we talk about these terms. And I think that would be good. And yeah, like, we And so far, I've looked into my case for next, like, I've looked into my term for next week. Yeah. It has been kind of difficult, but, like, it has been enjoyable kind of doing the research because this really brings me back to my university days of researching. And I definitely feel like it is such a huge undertaking, like, when you're doing these type of things, because you definitely want to go through multiple sources and you want to make sure that you are fleshing out what you're talking about in a concise and thoughtful manner, so that way you guys can enjoy it and we can get it out to you in good time, so that way you're not listening to something that's like a 5-hour talk, like a dissertation, where you can get something that's clear, concise, and digestible. So without further ado, I believe that we are ready to begin our new episode for this season. Basically, first episode of the new season officially. We hope you guys enjoy. And are there any disclaimers today?
I do. I have a disclaimer that I wanted to give. There's been a lot of misinformation. For example, like web super sleuths, which sometimes we are, but web super sleuths. There's been like tarot card readings attached to this case where people earlier in the case, people were trying to like come up with a suspect, things like that, rumors of suspects that resulted in issues for those people, including like an ex-boyfriend, roommates. So please be mindful of the information you take in, the information that you comment on, especially, like I said, because this case is ongoing. It hasn't even gone to trial yet. There are other great true crime podcasts that are going to cover, that have covered this case, and that are going to be more detailed and dive more in depth. So if you're interested in more details about this case or learning more about this case, there are plenty of other podcasts that you should also take a look at. But for today, I'm going to keep it brief when it comes to the case because I want to focus on our term and we don't want this episode to be like 2 hours long. So that is my disclaimer. Let's start the episode. Unless you have anything to add.
Last thing I want to add is definitely, again, because the trial has not started with this case, we can always go back to this case in the future when the trial is kind of more underway and like and concludes. We all know that trials take a very, very long time to get underway. So please be understanding that it may be a little while before we kind of get everything, because prosecutors and the defense have to bring their case in front of the judge and they're going to both fight for evidence to be put in, taken out, and that can take a long time. Justice system is very long and strenuous process. So, but we hope that, you know, things can be resolved and we can find justice in the conclusion of this case.
I like that. Okay. So to start this case, a brief intro of the victims. Now, today I'll be talking about the Idaho Four in relation to my term today. My term is affidavit. But I'll get back into what that means in a second. So a brief intro of the victims of the Idaho Four: Zanna Carnotal, Ethan Chapin, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee, I believe I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Gonsalves, were four students at the University of Idaho. Now, these four promising young people came from families that loved them and friends that are truly missing them. They all seem to have really close family relationships. So more about them. Madison and Kaylee were practically siblings. Like, they had met in the sixth grade and were inseparable from then on. They spent time at each other's homes, and Kaylee's parents said they basically had a sixth child. Madison was her parents' only child. And like I said, Kaylee came from a big family. So they got super tight. They spent time at each other's houses. Eventually, they went to the same high school together. They like begged their parents for them to be able to go to this school together. And then eventually they went to college together. They at one point worked at the same job. You know, they have mutual friends. So they were thick as thieves. Now, they were seniors and they were due to graduate that year, like in the spring. Mm-hmm. Zanna and Ethan were juniors at the college, and they had actually started dating a few months prior to their deaths. Also, Ethan is a triplet. And when I heard that, it broke my heart. I know there's like a twin, multiples. There's definitely a different type of bond there than your average sibling. Yes. And I feel like that, like, their triangle is now broken, and my heart breaks for them to have lost a piece of them. And of course, my heart breaks for all of the families, because just doing the research and hearing them talk about the four, they were really loved. And they seemed to be like genuinely good people, nice people. They were all very good looking. And it's just heartbreaking what happened. So a quick timeline of events. November 12th, 2022, starting at around 9 p.m., Ethan and Xana were seen at a party at Ethan's fraternity. He was a part of the fraternity Sigma Chi. Now, Sigma Chi was a short walk from their apartment house. Like, they lived, the way the house was set up, it was like three stories. Like, in my mind, I'm like, this is a nice place. It was three stories, but I believe the top entrance, the top floor, the second floor had its own entrance, and the bottom floor had its own entrance.
Yeah.
So the way the house was shaped was kind of funky. Yeah. Like, it was like a split level. Yeah.
It was like a split level. So, like, the way the main entrance of where they believe, like, the guy came through is technically the second floor.
Right. That's what was funky about it. So they were at this frat party. It wasn't too far from where they lived. At about 10 p.m., Kaylee and Madison, remember, they're the two inseparable best friends, they go to a sports bar called the Corner Club, you know, the local hangout. At about 1:30 in the morning, Madison and Kaylee are seen ordering from a nearby food truck. Now, the food truck had like a live stream, so they were caught on the food truck's live stream. Investigators say that Xana and Ethan return home at about 1:45 a.m., while Kaylee and Madison take a car ride home, and they got home at about 1:56 a.m. Now, there are two other roommates. The two other roommates had gone out that night, but they came back before everybody else did. They came back at about 1 a.m. That's what the police said. So the two roommates are already home. The two surviving roommates are already home. Ethan and Xana get home. And then, I'm getting mixed up. Yeah. And then Kaylee and Madison get home later at almost 2 o'clock in the morning.
So, and like between 1 and 2 o'clock, they were home.
They were all home. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is November 12th, November 13th, because of course, by this time, it's the next day because it's 1 in the morning. November 13th, a call from inside the house was placed at 11:58 a.m. for an unconscious person. This is when the person on the phone said that there was an unconscious person. But when officers arrived on the scene, they saw that it was much, much more than that. They found the bodies of Ethan, Xana, Kaylee, and Madison, who had been stabbed to death. The bodies of Ethan and Xana were found together on the second floor in Xana's bedroom. Madison and Kaylee were found lying together in Madison's bed on the third floor. And Kaylee's dog, Murphy, was also found upstairs. So there's a whole lot more detail that I'm leaving out because, like I said, we would be here for a while. But one of the roommates that was there, she kind of woke up. I believe her bedroom was on the third floor. The suspect or the murderer, walked right past her. But she was, like, in the doorway, and it was so dark. And I feel like she was probably groggy from sleep that they just missed each other. Like, she saw him, but he didn't see her. So he kept walking, so that's how she was able to survive. And I believe the other roommate was just asleep. So, quick thing to know, between 2:26 a.m. and 2:44 a.m., Kaylee called her ex-boyfriend Jack 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was actually investigated and eventually ruled out. He was one of those people that I mentioned in the disclaimer that was a suspect because of some of the, like, web sleuths. And of course, because of these phone calls, people were wondering, like, why were they calling him off the hook? Because not only did Kelly call Jack six times, between 2:44 and 2:52 a.m., Madison called him three times. 2:52 a.m., Kelly called him again.
Right. And that can kind of be thrown up as, like, a recent, could have been a recent breakup. And apparently it was. Like, apparently, like, the parents had, like, said that, like, there was a recent breakup for them. And they had been together for a while. So it's not shocking. Like, you ain't ever been drunk and you called your ex. And
listen.
And you knew darn well you were supposed to call him. And you had the feelings because, again, they're supposed to be graduating soon. So life is, like, coming at them. So you know you have all these feelings. Like, I've been privy to plenty of conversation with girls calling their boyfriends.
Oh, yeah.
Calling and things, like, and doing things that they probably wake up and be like, oh, my God, why did I call him like that?
Yeah. So that could easily rule him out as a suspect. And he was. So here is who eventually, and there's a whole, like I said, there's a whole bunch of detail that I'm leaving out if you are interested in all of the details, then I would say for sure, check it out. I believe there's a documentary also about this case that'll fill in a lot of those details. But at the time of the murders, Brian Koberger was a PhD student and working as a teaching assistant in criminal justice at Washington State University.
He is a bad name, a bad name.
Listen. And when you see a picture of this guy, he looks like an actor from a criminal show, like Law and Order. Latanya was saying he looked like somebody from Criminal Minds.
An unsub. He really does. Like, he does. I said that literally when I first saw that man, that he looks just like a freaking unsub from Criminal Minds that, like, they would have to find. And I was just like, why does he look like that? But then when you read, like, he kind of had a little low-key obsession with that type of stuff. So
it's
shocking.
So it was weird. So before this, he studied criminology at DeSales University. First as an undergraduate, and then he finished his graduate studies in June of 2022. So while studying there, he studied under Catherine Ramsland. She is a renowned forensic psychologist who, she interviewed the BTK serial killer and co-wrote the book, Confession of a Serial Killer, The Untold Story of Dennis Rader, the BTK Killer. Girl, this is the longest title. You could have shortened this up. Okay.
The editor
the
said
book
no.
Is The book is called Confession of a Serial Killer, The Untold Story of Dennis Rader, the BTK Killer. She co-wrote this book with the BTK Killer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember, like, mind you, I watched a lot of serial killer stuff on him, and, like, yeah, that book comes up a lot. That's, like, one of the main books, so that's the only book he's ever done, like, with someone.
So she's a pretty big deal.
Right.
So he studied under her. He was working part-time as a security guard until August 2021 at Pleasant Valley School District. Now, DeSales University is in PA, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's where he was found.
In Pennsylvania, right. So
yeah.
Pleasant Valley School District. I went to school in Pennsylvania. I'll just say that. But Pleasant Valley School District. I have a lot of people that I know who went to high school in Pleasant Valley, like school district. Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. So when I saw that, I was like, Pleasant Valley? I know quite a few people who went to high school
in
Pleasant Valley.
That was a weird thing. It was like, he's in Washington State, but this happened in Idaho. Like, I mean, Ohio. And then,
no, Idaho,
like,
you're right.
Is Idaho?
Yeah. I kept saying Ohio in my head too, but it's Idaho.
Idaho, and then, like, then there's Pennsylvania connection. I was just like, wow, this is really a cross-country trip.
Yeah. So, his mother was listed as a paraprofessional. So, the alleged murderer carried out a research project to, and I quote, understand, this is what you were talking about earlier, to understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision-making when committing a crime. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Koberger reached out to potential participants on Reddit with a survey, mm-hmm. which eventually resurfaced after his arrest.
Yeah.
In particular, this study seeks to understand the story behind your most recent criminal offense with an emphasis on your thoughts and feelings throughout your experience. That's what the post on Reddit said. His fascination continued around the time of the murders when he applied for an internship with the local police department. Mm-hmm. So he's just doing all sorts of insider research.
Right. Yep.
It's giving, let me figure out how to get away with murder.
Yep. It's how to get away with murder.
Which, really used to love that show.
Loved it down.
So the affidavit revealed that he applied for an internship in the fall of 2022 with the Pullman Police Department and wrote an essay how he had an interest in, and I quote again, assisting rural law enforcement agencies with how to better collect and analyze technological data in public safety operations. Yep. I feel like he's doing research on how to get away with a crime. And also yep. how to navigate, like, how they collect their data and analyze the crime scenes and things like that. Like, he's doing his research. Yeah. As a PhD student.
He's accounting for rural areas, but the whole thing about it is he's not accounting for cities. Like, money plays a huge role in a place's ability to research a crime.
Oh, yeah.
Like... And when you get into more mainstream stuff, like four college students that were well-loved being killed, they're throwing the money at it.
Absolutely. Because that's exactly what they've been doing. So eventually he was charged with four counts of murder and one count of burglary relating to the killing of Ethan Chapin, Kaylee Gonsalves, Zana Cardotto, and Madison Mogen in the early morning hours of November 13th. So this took place in Moscow, Idaho, to be exact. So he has been charged. I'll go over updates on the case in a second, like the most recent updates. But back to an affidavit. An affidavit is a sworn statement a person makes before a notary or officer of the court, outside of the court, asserting that certain facts are true to the best of that person's knowledge. Affidavits by both plaintiff or the prosecution and defense witnesses are usually collected in preparation for a trial. Mm-hmm. So they gather all the information, they gather all of certain facts to prepare for this trial. What is the purpose of an affidavit? Affidavits can occur anytime a formal promise is made. So it doesn't just technically have to be like with a criminal case in this way. Or something like tragic that happens like this. It's whenever a formal promise is made, and they are often used as a form of documentation tied to a specific person. Mm-hmm. They're often used in court to serve as evidence towards a certain side in a dispute or to affirm a claim that someone is making. So it's just information. So what I'll do now, there's a 19-page affidavit from December of 2022. It was a statement made from Brett Payne. He was one of the responding officers on the scene. And in this particular affidavit, there's a lot of redacted information. So a lot of things are missing. But this and is from...
probably has to do because the trial hasn't occurred yet. A trial hasn't occurred, so the affidavit has to be redacted for court. These are probably information they're going to present in court that if let out, it could mess with the case. So,
and that's exactly what's been going on with this case. So I'm not going to read all 19 pages, but I do want to read like maybe a paragraph or two. Okay. So this is Exhibit A, Statement of Brett Payne. The below information is provided by Brett Payne, who is a duly appointed, qualified, and acting peace officer within the county of Lata, state of Idaho. So all of these things happen in Lata County. Brett Payne is employed by Moscow Police Department in the official capacity or position of corporal and has been a trained and qualified peace officer for approximately 4 years. Corporal Payne is being assisted by members of the Idaho State Police and agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I can't read today. Or the FBI. So, like you were saying, there's money in this case. They called it the FBI.
Yes, that's where the money came from. Because, well, and I feel like the money really came in because they had a feeling once investigating that he was state. And once it crossed the state lines, you can get the FBI involved. Call them in.
Yep. So, on November 3rd, and this is Mr. Payne's account, on November 13th, 2022, at approximately 4 p.m., Moscow Police Department Sergeant Blaker and I responded to 1122 King Road, hereafter referred to as the King Road residence, to assist with scene security and processing of a crime scene associated with four homicides. Upon our arrival, the Idaho State Police forensic team was on the scene and was preparing to begin processing the scene. MPD Officer Smith, one of the initial responding officers to the incident, advised he would walk me through the scene. So I'm sorry, I'll correct myself. Brett Payne was not one of the responding officers. He was an officer that later came onto the scene. So Officer Smith, who was an initial responding officer, was walking Brett Payne through the scene. So they entered the King Road residence through the bottom floor door on the north side of the building. This is what we were talking about, how the first floor had its own entrance and then the second floor had a different entrance. Officer Smith and I then walked upstairs to the second floor. Officer Smith directed me down the hallway to the west bedroom on the second floor, which I later learned through Xana's driver's license and other personal belongings was Xana Kernodle's room. Just before this room, there was a bathroom door on the south wall of the hallway. As I approached the room, I could see a body, which was Xana's body, laying on the floor. Xana was deceased with wounds which appeared to have been caused by an edged weapon. Also in the room was a male, later identified as Ethan Chapin, who was also deceased with wounds later determined by the autopsy report to be caused by sharp forced injuries. Now, I will say, the page after that is redacted. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if there's some details from the autopsy report that have to be left out for now. Mm-hmm. So he then goes on to recount that he follows Officer Smith upstairs to the third floor. The third floor had two bedrooms and one bathroom. The bedroom on the west side of the floor was Kaylee Gonsalves' room. I later learned from another officer's body cam, there was a dog in the room when the Moscow police officers initially responded. The dog was Murphy. It actually belonged to Kaylee and her ex-boyfriend, Jack, the boyfriend that she called multiple times that night. I found out from my interview with Jack that he and Kaylee shared the dog. Officer Smith then pointed out a small bathroom on the east side of the third floor. The bathroom shared a wall with Madison Mogin's bedroom, which was on the southeast corner of the third floor. As I entered this bedroom, I could see two females in the single bed in the room. Both Kaylee and Madison were deceased with visible stab wounds. Also later noticed that what appeared to be a tan leather knife sheath laying on the bed next to Madison's right side. The sheath was later processed and had Kbar and USMC in the United States Marine Corps Eagle Globe, and like their insignia stamped on the outside of it. So they were able to get male DNA left on the button snap of the knife sheath. As part of the investigation, numerous interviews were conducted by Moscow Police Department, Idaho State Police detectives, and FBI agents. Two of the interviews included BF and DM. Both BF and DM were inside the King Road residence at the time of the homicides and were roommates to the victims. So they, at one point, were leaving the names of the roommates out of it. They were just using their initials. And I'm sure that had a lot to do with their protection, or maybe they requested it. But like I said, because of all the misinformation, a lot of the web sleuths jumping to conclusions and trying to do their own investigations, they left a lot of things out for protection of some of the people that were involved, because although these roommates survived this attack, they're still victims. Like, they were there during a murder, and it's really sad. So I'm not going to read anymore, because I mean, we could be here all day. There's an account of, like, Ethan and Xana are seen by one of the roommates at the frat house, like I mentioned before. They were there from, like, 9 to 1:45, and that's when they headed home. And then the two, Kaylee and Madison, were seen at the local bar. Then they were seen at the local food truck called the Grub Truck. But everybody was at home by 2 a.m. and asleep, or at least in their rooms, by 4 a.m.
Right.
With the exception of Xana, who got a DoorDash order at 4 a.m. So, I said all of that to say, affidavits can be short, affidavits can be extremely long, and there are things that can be left out of affidavits, because essentially, like I said, it's just a sworn statement that each person makes. There is an affidavit that Brian Koberger, the alleged murderer, made, and I think his is even longer than 19 pages. I kind of briefly ran through it, but it's his account of what he says happened, you know, the facts of what he says happened. It's interesting because he was pulled over. I believe he was pulled over with his father around the times of the murder. But he definitely had more details to add. I don't know, a lot of it seemed like lies to me. But hopefully that explains what an affidavit is. It's just a sworn statement that is verified, of course, by a notary or an officer of the court. Right. Usually in movies, you see a person in the interrogation room, and they're like, write down everything that happened. It usually becomes like their affidavit of, this is my sworn statement. I have to sign this in front of the notary to say that this is what I say happened. These are the events that I say occurred.
Right, that this wasn't filled in by police, like, or things like that. Like, this was as I wrote it. This is what I said.
Because literally, a lot of these statements are, like, handwritten. But I do want to give updates on this case. As of March 1st, unfortunately, to the chagrin, I never get to use chagrin, so I try to use it when I can, but to the chagrin of the parents and families of the victims, a judge suggested that the trial, which was supposed to start this summer 2024, may actually be pushed back to 2025. There were like rumblings that it may be 2026, but that particular judge suggested the trial may be pushed to 2025. He's trying to be fair, because I was like, well, what's the holdup? So the judge's name is Judge... His name is Judge John C. Judge. His name is Judge Judge. District Judge John C. Judge has had to consider motions. So there's been a lot of motions from the alleged murderer's side, including banning cameras in the courtroom. Now, of course, this case has gotten very huge. It's gotten a lot of traction. So they're talking about banning cameras in the courtroom, the disclosure of certain DNA evidence. And a request by the defense for a change of venue. So they move the trial because they're like, oh, it's gotten so huge in the public and people are going to have an opinion and that's going to sway everything. So they want to change the venue. Now, the Lada County prosecutor, Bill Thompson, which is for the victim side, said he could be ready to present his case in 2025, March. So next March of 2025, for a trial that would last about 6 weeks. That seems pretty fast to me.
Right.
These trials be lasting months. But Bill Thompson is like, no, I could be ready to present my case by next spring. And this trial is going to last about 6 weeks. So he seems pretty confident.
But like, the thing I think for me is they have to, because there's like, the parts that like you're leaving out is like the parts that actually connect the accused to the crime. And I think that they have to draw that out and make it make sense and discount anyone else that the defense puts up. Like, the defense is going to try to put up the roommates. The defense is going to try to put up the ex-boyfriend. The defense is going to try to put up John that was there with them at the food truck. That, like, they're going to pull. So they need to be able to have all of the evidence that says, hey, there is no one else but this man beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the whole thing that people also don't understand about defense. The defense attorney, even though we all be saying like, oh, like, how could you do that? The defense attorney's only job is not necessarily to find this person innocent. It is to make sure the prosecutor is committing fraud.
Yep.
So, like, that's their process. So, it's going to take a minute. Change of venue. I had a feeling that they would probably do that because once the case gets really like on the mainstream news, change of venue is like one of the first courses of action. Of course, they're not going to want videos inside of there. I mean, I don't think videos necessarily need to be inside of there because, you know, let the trial happen. I don't think it needs to be this wild storm. I just need like these people to get justice. Like,
yeah, because their parents and I believe it was Zana's dad that spoke out. He's just like, come on, like, kind of like, let's get this over with so we can let our kids rest and so that we can like move forward. Because everybody's up in limbo. This it's like something that's still going on. But right. Ann Taylor, which I was like the clothing store. Ann Taylor, for the defense, the lead public defender for lead public defender for Brian Kohberger, suggested she would not be ready until June of 2025. So it was supposed to start summer 2024. The prosecutor's like, hey, I could be ready by March 2025, but the other side,
we're looking at,
can be ready until next summer.
Like, she by Sheree trial, spring, summer.
Summer.
Fall, like, leisure wear. Like, I don't get, like, the thing about trials is, you experience so many deaths of your loved one. The initial death of them, the death of them in the media, and the death of them again at trial. They have to live that over and over again.
And that's what...
Oh my God.
That's what her dad was saying, was like, can we get this going so that we can just process it for once and for all? So... Ann Taylor was saying, given the large number of potential witnesses and the volume of records, she will be
right. The internet history. A lot of it's going to be internet history, Reddit history, and stuff like that, I think.
So, Judge ultimately decided to push back a decision on setting a trial date to first hear the arguments and attempt to be fair. So, he's trying to be like, okay, let me hear you out. We'll decide about the trial, we'll set the trial date because I'm trying to be fair. And he says, I'm trying to be fair and realistic about when we could really be ready for trial because I only want to do this once.
Yep.
He's like, I don't want to keep doing this. We come back and then I want to do this one time and one time only. So this same judge in December denied Brian Kohberger's attempt to have his... Here's the audacity of this guy. He attempted to have his murder indictment dismissed on claims of lack of sufficient admissible evidence, prosecutorial misconduct, and grand jury bias. He was trying to say that the jury was already tainted because it was so big in the media and they had already formed opinions and that they were going to be biased.
Okay, sir. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not get beside ourselves now.
It's like, you're trying to get the whole murder indictment dismissed? You going for the gusto here.
But listen, this is not the first time nor the last time that they has ever tried, baby, because I promise you, they're going to try everything to get that person off. And it's sad because it's a real failed attempt. Nobody wants to hear it. Like, tell it to your mama because nobody wants to hear it. But yeah.
Judge was like, nice try. I don't think.
And the way that they connected him is so crazy. The way basically it just shows any information he gathered is old news. Because any information he gathered on how to get away with murder must have been old news. Because he effed up. He funked up.
They found like a white, like his white car. It was a whole lot of
He did it. He know he did it, but I mean, they got to go through the trial. And again, because technically they didn't find him until like December of 2022. So we're going on like a year and some months. So yeah, about 2025 is when the trial would be. That's about the 2 year mark.
And unfortunately, you know, I think a trial should be underway of 2024. Like, I think that that would be the best outcome for the family. But for it to drag out until 2025, is like
beyond ridiculous.
That's just an injustice for the family, for the victims. But I really, truly am confident that justice will be served for these four young people whose lives were just cut so short.
Right, like this is just sadness, and just it's heartbreaking. It's one of the most heartbreaking situations when you just in limbo. And like currently, my family is dealing with that with our like the trial going on with my family. Is like the level of heartbreak you just go through time and time again, and you're just trying to get through it day by day.
And
basically, when it gets pushed back, it's just another stab. It's just another ooh. It's just another ooh. It's more salt on the wound. It's more, and it just makes you feel like, when does this end? When does this end?
I can't even fully grieve my loved one because, like you said, you're constantly reopening an old, like a fresh wound. You're constantly reopening my stitches. Just maybe when I think I can go on to the next day, I'm constantly being reminded that this isn't quite yet over.
Right.
But they had beautiful memorials and services for these four young folks. I did want to mention ways to support. Of course, like I said, watch what you comment on. Watch the information that you are absorbing, that you may be providing or spreading. We tried to be very careful because of the sensitivity of this case and because it is ongoing. But ways to support: Zana Cardonal has a scholarship endowment with the University of Idaho. So if you are interested in donating, which no amount is too small, you would go to idaho.edu/Zana-Cardonal. Kernodle. And we'll put it in the notes. And then you can also donate to the Ethan Chapin Sigma Chi Scholarship Fund at Sigma Chi, that's SIGMACHI.org/foundation/Ethan. If you would like to support, like I said, no amount is too small. The point is to keep their memory alive and to be able to use their legacy to help other students. Because like I said before, Zana and Ethan were juniors. And they were set to be finished soon. I believe they were all awarded posthumous degrees, honorary degrees. And Kaylee and Madison, I'm getting my girls mixed up, but one of their families actually walked across the stage and accepted her degree on her behalf. When I read that, I was like tearing up. Because I can imagine that was just an emotional ceremony. And for that to happen, I can't imagine. My heart just goes out to their families. Because it's such a joyous time where you're so proud. You would be watching your child crossed that stage. Like, you and I both went to school, so we know what that feeling is like. And to see your family, your parents out there, it just, it's not easy. It's not easy getting a degree. It's not easy, no matter if you graduate with a 1.5. It is not, well, I don't know if you graduate with a 1.5.
I don't know, but you get the point.
even if you barely make it, you made it. And it is not an easy task. And I'm not there yet in my parenting journey, but I can't imagine that feeling of just accomplishment. And it was Ethan's mom, because when I was listening and doing my research, there was like a recording of her voice, and it was just her expressing that her and Ethan's dad were just so proud. They were like, we raised, because like I say, it was a triplet, three like wonderful human beings who are going to be great citizens in this world. They're kind people. Like, we did it. Like, cause you know, they're all in like college at the same time, and it was family weekend, like the week before.
Oh yeah, family weekend. Oh, listen, that used to be a time, because you had people crying and stuff, because they're just like, and then to get to senior year, so they're expecting, they're like, well, next time we're up here, it'll be for the big day.
Yeah. And
oh God, that's heartbreaking.
And they had one more year for Ethan. So, but they were just so happy to see like him thriving. He was in the fraternity, like, you know, he started dating Xana. And I'm so happy that they got that week before. To kind of, they didn't know it would be a goodbye, but they got to spend like that happy time to visit them that week before they passed away. So they were able to see them and hug on them and love them one last time. But just hearing Ethan's mom, just like, you know, the dad and I were like big upping each other. Like we did that, you know, our son is about to graduate, and like we did it. And they were so triumphant. And then for this to happen like a week later, it's just, it was very, very sad.
It's unimaginable. It's an unimaginable thing. And I hope no one ever has to experience something like that. And I hope that, you know, through this, like the parents could come together and really be a support system for each other, because no one has experienced something like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are a part of the club that no one ever wants to be a part of. And I'm just, some of the things, like, I guess, like, people kept mentioning, it was just like, you know, it was like, kind of, at least they had each other in those final moments. And
yeah, that's what her dad, I believe it was Kaylee's dad.
Yeah.
Because
I think it was.
Madison were found together. Kaylee's dad was like, you know, they have had each other since they met in the sixth grade, and at least in their final moments, they didn't have to be alone. They still had each other.
Right.
My heart just dropped. Like, ugh.
Like, I just, I couldn't even fathom, like, what his mind is just going through. Like, just the loss. They've been together forever, into the very end. And that was, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, Xander, like, so young. Everybody's just so young. And I wish them, I wish justice for the family. And I really say, like, again, like, we will go over this case again as the trial, hopefully trial goes underway next year. We will be able to give a positive update of justice being served.
Absolutely. So we'll definitely do an update as this case progresses. Hopefully, and I believe, I'm confident that it will be good news, and that justice will be served, and that the alleged murderer will be going away for a very long time. I don't know if death penalty is on the, because Pennsylvania, no.
Idaho is one of those, like, I don't know. I really don't know much about Idaho but the potatoes. So yeah,
exactly. So I'm not sure if death penalty is on the table. I kind of thought I glanced over that. But like I said, we'll keep you posted with updates on this trial. Rest in peace to Xana and Ethan and Kaylee and Madison. And our hearts are with their families. We really hope that we were able to shed just a brief light on this case in a respectful way, in a way that their families would be okay with. We try to do that for all of our cases because these are real people. They're not just true crime podcast topics. They're real people. And our hearts are definitely with them, and our thoughts are with them as they proceed through this tough, like, next 2 years.
Yeah, same. And again, you guys, like, keep off of the forums and try to keep to sources that are reliable when you're dealing with these cases. And also let some time go by for evidence to be built, because the more information is found, like, early on, it's going to be just guesses and what ifs and things. We got to think, we got to go to what we actually know and what evidence has been found, or even the lack thereof of evidence. We cannot keep making these thought-provoking things, because these, again, are real people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to end on?
No. I would like to say, keep me in your thoughts, because I've been sick for a while.
Oh, thank God.
So hopefully the next time you hear from me, I'll sound a little bit better. But yeah, keep us in your thoughts. Thank you guys for continuing to listen. We're back. For real, we're back. And next week, Latanya will take it away.
Yes, look forward to talking to you guys next week. We'll see you again. Bye.
Bye.